Well, good morning, young William. We are both full of vinegar and that other stuff today because we are energized and not tired. Wrong.
I don't know about that.
Our job is to
I'm
lift each
exhausted.
other
I
up.
told you earlier, it feels like I played tackle football yesterday, every day. Everything hurts.
Man, you've been through so much. Bumpy rides and judging many, 200 dogs, a whole show in New Brunswick.
I had to judge the entire show in New Brunswick on an emergency situation, which was great fun. It was fun to judge all the different groups. I felt comfortable and I got to judge my first best in show. But you look at Pat Trotter and these other elderly members of our group, and I don't know how they do it. I was exhausted.
Yeah, it's I don't think anyone realizes how hard it is on the body. I mean, first of all, you're flying in an uncomfortable position and seat. Then you're lifting luggage and throwing luggage around. Oh, that's good for your back, right?
We had a long haul between hotel and site, like 40 minutes almost. And it was terrain. Like my back was starting to get taxed. And then I judged the whole day. And then I woke up Sunday morning, had to go back in and judge one more group. And my back was done. And it was done. You know, I don't know how they do
you
it.
Judge, think about 150 dogs, 175 dogs for a 4-day show, right? Multi-group judges. And they're usually the ones that are older because that's how long it takes. And you're talking about 600 deep knee bends, 600 toe tips. You know, I mean, it is hard. And then hard floors often.
Yeah.
It's a very grueling physical thing. I don't think people look at it that way.
Don't realize it. And then I not to play the violins or anything. But then I had to leave on Wednesday because I drove to South Carolina, which is like 11 hours. I drove to South Carolina and judged 4 days. I've never judged 4 days before. Mm. It's exhausting. Like I was beat like a baby seal. Can I still say that? I don't know. Beat like a rented mule.
There you go. We shouldn't even hit those. Anyway. But
I met a lot of fans on the weekend, Wayne.
You did, I know. I did too. The two shows in Michigan. I think what's happening, Will, my mom's gone. Your mom's around. I think she's paying these people.
I think
how else would that many people come up and go, can I have my picture taken? Me gets the podcast all day, right?
Oh yeah. I met at least three number one fans.
One
was great. She was from like, I want to say Minnesota, but she lived in the Carolinas now. But she said, listening to us argue about hockey reminded her of home. She loved it.
Yeah, of course, Minnesota, but that's great. Well, Anna, I think Anna at breakfast every morning in Houston, a pleasure to meet you, another fan. It's been fun. It's really been fun. We like doing it, but our schedules are tough. We're not complaining. We do this because we love it. We don't do this for any other reason. And also it gets us, Will and I live in different countries. So it gives us the opportunity to catch up with each other before and after the podcast.
Exactly.
So yeah, we enjoy doing it and we really appreciate our listeners. And tell your friends and enemies about the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. Anyway.
That was smooth.
I had a heck of a week.
You were in Houston.
I was in Houston. And I couldn't leave. And this is what happened, Will. You know, these are the seminars that DJAA puts on. Rick Gershwinder, I always mispronounce your name. I love you, buddy. Sorry. Sam
Rick Gershwinder,
McDonald,
great guy.
Yeah, he is a great guy. Sam Houston McDonald, you know, one of our favorites. Robert Stein and crew. And Mary Miller, how did she do this? She's always running around making things happen. You know, it was just a phenomenal effort in putting together the seminar. In spite of, Will, this event took place 10 days after Hurricane Beryl, which devastated Houston and surrounding areas all over Texas. So some exhibitors drove all the way in to find out that their hotel blew down and was unavailable for occupancy. I got off the plane and I'm driving about it's a 9-mile ride to the hotel from Javi. And I said, why is that? That hotel has no face. The whole front, the whole facade, gone, laying around in the yard.
That's so I hope crazy.
People don't have rooms there. Well, they did, and other hotels. And then other hotels lost power. So they didn't have any power to open, although they weren't, or they were flooded. So it sent people scrambling for rooms last minute. How Sam and crew pulled this thing together and got the dogs and the people there. That hotel, fortunately, the host Holiday Inn, didn't get hit. It lost power for a day or two, but it was back up. And it was fortunately, you could walk there from the hotel to the NRG Center.
Oh, good.
If you had the NRG to do it.
You were saving that, weren't you?
No, I just
you were saving
it. Really that. Did. That was it really did. It was really, really humid and hot. So it took it. This is what proves the dedication of dog show people to not only put this thing on, but to make it work. I didn't see much of the show because I was in school from 8 to 5 every day. But we bust down there for lunch once in a while. And it's magnificent. I mean, they had a Subaru dealer set up with East Coast crates, my favorite crates, in the back with a ramp for sale, these Subarus. They had Serta beds. Every display you could imagine was set up. And they had the relay races for the dogs. And the people loved it. There was a line at the gate to pay money to come to a dog show, Will. It didn't go around the block, but it was a line.
Yeah.
It was real. Houston does that whole cluster does a great job of getting the people from the people from the area, the public, into the event to see all the great things that purebred dogs can do. And it was phenomenal. It was really well done. The entry is a little lower than it used to be. I think it's down to 1,700. There were days when Houston was 3,000 and 4,000.
Yeah.
But that's just the way it is. But it was really energizing for me to see that activity of a club that can put on an event for the whole community. And then upstairs, you've got all these seminars. And that's another topic. Have you ever been to any of them?
No,
I haven't. You've got to go to one. It's really different.
Yeah, never been to the Houston set of shows.
Well, the seminars are, you sign up way in advance. There are 4 seminars each year put on by dog show organizations that judges organizations that offer breeds in a group. The Oregon dog judges, they put on, it's 12 breeds there. So half a group. That's the same for the American Dog Show judges. They put on a seminar once a year for 12 breeds. So it's, you can get, you know, half a group's worth of seminars. And they offer one group each. So they try to space them in together so they're not all doing the sporting group one year.
Sure.
The other is the DJAA, which was the one in Houston. That's really a big one because they do an entire group. And when I say entire group, I mean all the breeds in it that show up, you know. But they offer a tremendous range of breeds, and they almost get them all, but all in one group. And that's phenomenal. The other one is Orlando, the AKC, DJAA combined. So DJAA puts on 1.5, really 2. So what you have is, that's 2 groups in Orlando. So you have 2 groups in Orlando, 1 group in Houston, half a group in Oregon, and half a group in ADJA. That's not a lot of opportunities. And I just started thinking about this. We need judges that are educated. We need multi-group judges, evidently, because of the system that's so overloaded with shows. You need all these judges. And you have 4 opportunities. And by the way, it's 2-3 grand to go to one of these, right?
Oh, so easy, right?
DJA, bless their hearts, if you belong to their organization, it's $200. The AKC DJAA is $450. Or there's some 300. The range of prices is all over the place. But what you get is 3 points for each breed you take. You need, if it's your first group, you need 5 points for low entry breeds. You need 10 points for all the other breeds. By the way, Irish Wolfhounds are not low entry. We see ones and twos if we're lucky around here. So they must be somewhere.
See, they're not low entry up here. In certain pockets, we get good numbers in wolfhounds.
So. We have good breeders up there too, and all in a similar location. Anyway, so everyone wants to go to these because you can get a really good education and 3 points. And you can do it 9-12 times a week if you want to. They're usually 4-day seminars, and you can take 3 classes a day. So it dawns on me, we pay $25 to apply. We have to pay for our own dog judges badges, which is just funny. We have to buy our own standards, which is funny. Here's the rules you have to judge by. You got to pay for it. And then you've got all these fees to send in there. It's $75 a breed course. Now, remember, we're talking about 200 breeds.
Yeah.
$75 a breed course, $35 an exam. So right there, you're at 105 with just those two per breed, plus a $25 application fee. And you got to get to this. You have to get to the seminars, and you have to pay for the seminars, and you have to fly in hotels. We're talking thousands of group. And you only have 4 chances at this, and it might not be your breed or your group. There's a real good chance you're going to fly. Almost everyone's going to fly. There's that expense. So call me crazy.
Crazy.
Wouldn't you think the AKC would put on some of these?
Well,
they've got the people. They've got the staff. They've got the money from us. Why wouldn't they put that back in the judging community and host their own seminars? I know they do the great work. And I mean, Paul Spector and that crowd, man, they put on a great seminar in Orlando. We all know that. But that's one, and it's a half one because you have DJA helping them. How about we have, you know, maybe 6, one in each region that they put on, or 4, make it 8. It's just not enough opportunities to learn, and you end up scrambling all over the country for points. We want to learn. The education's important. You know who came to the seminars in Houston, Will, and took classes?
Paula Nichol.
She already has the groups.
Yeah. And she's doing best in show at Westminster. Like she's,
that's why she's judging
the top of the food chain.
She still comes out and wants to learn more about breed. She's been judging for years.
That's incredible.
Isn't that amazing?
That's commitment. That's the dedication. I find it funny, though, listening to you talk. So we have to, well, not we, you have to pay so much to learn to be or to be able to judge at AKC shows, and you pay the AKC all this money to do these things, but they need you in order to have a show.
There's a great song by Todd Snyder that talks about a drywall guy, and he says to his boss, you know, I can walk out here anytime I want because you need me more than I need you. So don't give me a hard time, boss. You can find your own drywall. I'm out of here. If you just keep giving me grief, I can get a job tomorrow hanging drywall. You can't. So it reminds me of that situation a little bit, but it is ironic.
It really is when you think about it.
I mean, if all the judges said, I'm not doing this anymore, you don't have dog shows. You don't have registrations from dog shows. And you don't get the best purebred dogs being bred.
Here's a hockey analogy.
Yeah.
Here's a hockey analogy. Back in the day, in the original 6, before there was a players' union.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. The players went on strike. And when they went on strike, the league stopped. Right. The league stopped. No income, nothing. They don't, I guess in a sense they pay to learn their craft, but they don't pay it to the NHL. Mm. And you see where I'm going? It's funny. It's like they decided to have a union. Not that I want to have a union.
No, we're on strike.
But they had a union. So they had rights because before all the owners were making all the money.
Yeah.
And the players were making minimal money. And now they're, there's cost.
Yeah, I think it's when you're judging 600 dogs a weekend. And by the way, when you add up all these expenses now, what it costs to get a judge's approval for a breed or a group or multi-groups, if you think you're going to make money doing this, and you really account for everything, you start to actually keep a record of what you spend, you will never make money judging.
No, you're just kind of making it up.
Yeah. And you've got to live long enough to do that. So when handlers, for example, retire, it takes a long time to fill out all these applications. So there's years and thousands to get started. And then you have to wait to get assignments.
Yeah.
And then you've got to wait to get provisionals. So can they afford the 3-4 years before they start making $10,000 a year? It's a unique situation, all caused by, and I know we harp on it too much, but too many dog shows.
Yeah.
If some of those clubs don't make it, they don't make it. I feel sorry for them. I know they're passionate about doing what they do, but extinction is not a bad thing, Will. I don't want dinosaurs in my living room.
Exactly. And it just makes other clubs around them stronger. So it's just life finds a way. That's Jurassic Park.
Jim Moses and I had dinner almost every night. And you want to learn after a seminar? You have conversations with people like that. So the real learning to me, not only is in the seminar itself, it's the hallways. It's always been the hallways for me. Because there was, we had Valeria, Paula, Jimmy, and others. Wood was there. Woody Warren. There were some really good dog people there taking seminars. So afterwards, you get to talk about those things and help get all those ideas together. There's really a good learning experience.
Oh, for sure.
I had the good fortune with Whippets of having the woman who taught the seminar sit ringside the next day when I didn't have a seminar because I cut it short the last day, too much information in the hard drive. And I sat with her and did a ringside observation, which really helped gel all the things we talked about the day before. So there's really opportunities to learn there.
Oh, and I said, but there's opportunities everywhere. Like I was on a panel this past week, and I don't want to try to say them all because there was a lot of people, but there was Michael Faulkner, Michael Canalizo, Peggy Beisel, Cindy Vogels. It was a good wealth. Pam Lambie, there was a wealth of knowledge there. And at dinner and at lunch, you learn a lot.
You
learn a lot. You ask a question of these more experienced judges, and they will help you. I learned a lot just being in their presence, sitting next to them, talking about certain dogs and certain reasons for this, reasons for that, and how it should be and how it is now. And it was like going to a seminar. It was wonderful.
No points. But you know, you talk about the education between individuals. Between judges. I hope the public doesn't think, well, it's just judges talking again, trying to put something. We're talking about dogs. We want to learn till the day we die, we want to learn. And if you have that passion, you're going to be reasonably willing to be educated. With that said, here's the thing that kind of gets on your nerves a little bit when you're in these seminars. You've got really smart people in there asking really good questions of very good instructors. But it's 10%, maybe 20%. You have people raising their hand first, cannot wait. So the way these seminars work, Will, you have the lecture type thing in one room, and then you go into the hands-on room where they have dogs for you to examine. This can be problematic for a lot of reasons. These are usually in like a classroom size room at a conference center. They're not very big rooms. The carpeting is like swirly op art, cool, trendy carpeting, weird patterns. There are no windows. And there are 30 students standing around the walls with six dogs standing in the middle, depending on the breed. Then all 30 of them go over the dogs. Would you bring your dog there, Will?
Not a chance. You're just asking for trouble.
And then what happens is you split, right? So 15 people go in one corner and 15 people go in the other corner, and they move the dog back and forth. So the dogs, a lot of them are like, I'm not going in that corner. Why are all those people staring at me with clipboards? 15 people standing there staring at me with clipboards.
Yeah.
Some breeds, not a problem. Many breeds, a problem. And I took a lot of smooth, short-haired sighthound breeds this year, and I didn't touch any of them. And I recommend that people didn't. And I would even speak up and go, hey, can you see that dog is stressed right now? Think about it. You really want to go over it and show us what you don't know by going over it, which is exactly what those people do, right? They get into the deep body massage on a whippet, you know, which you can see from a mile away. And then they want to show you all the parts that they're feeling for and all that. And the poor dog's got to do this 20, 30 times. It's really rough to get good dogs to come now. I don't know the solution to the process. That's the way it's always been done, and it works. And a lot of breeds, no problem, like I said. But there are those breeds that, and I think this year, more than ever, the instructors were speaking up going, don't, if you're going to touch them, you don't need to touch everything. And no, we don't do teeth and testicles. That's, you know, obviously no one does those. But still, the dog's going through this. So a lot of instructors and even students speaking up going, hey, come on, man, that dog's stressed. Don't touch that dog anymore. Because we want to learn. And there is a way, when you see them, it's great because you take all that stuff from the seminar room, hands on them. Wonderful to see the dog. But quite frankly, Mike Work was there. He sat in the corner and he would whisper to me the best one. You know, I'd say, what do you like? And he'd say, what do you like? And we have the same dog. And he didn't even get out of his chair. You know, he didn't need to. He would get him walk around. But it's, you need to have, I don't know, Mike's been around a long time. A lot of people have. And if you've touched enough dogs, the dog has no hair. I don't know how necessary that is. Right. Anyway, they try their best. And these people, you talk about dedication. The woman with Sloogies drove from Chicago to Houston. That's 1,000 miles with the only two Sloogies. Got there. The hotel was not available because the face fell off. She drove and drove till 10 o'clock at night finding a hotel, which was not close to the seminar. And then she drove all the way back, 2,000 miles. Nada, nothing. It's on her nickel. Just to have her dogs being gone over and to help teach people. Yeah, and she wasn't the only one that drove that distance to bring dogs. Because it's hard. If you're at the show and you're showing, and you've got a really good one, which we all should see, and you just won the breed and you're going in the group, would you bring yours?
Well, I remember showing in those events, sort of like top 20, where they would have multiple judges, 3 and 4 or 5. Like we'd have the show shows up here, where you have like, sometimes you have 4 judges.
Yeah.
And even seasoned show dogs in that atmosphere, going over by 4 different individuals. By the 4th one, they're kind of like, what is going on? And by the end of the night, some of them are like, this is it. I'm done. You're not doing this to me. So
these 15 are dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of them are young because they're the people that are willing to come to the seminars and willing to help. And these are these people that bring these dogs. I mean, there should be medals for them. It's a lot to do. And they bring often in the less popular breeds, they end up bringing their whole kennel. And they're juggling dogs and showing each other's dogs. So anyway, you each get a clipboard and it's A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And they all wear their letter. And you go over them and then you rank. You pick your best of breed, best of opposite, or 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever you want to do. One of the tricks, if you really want to learn, is to get someone who is well-educated or a good learner and stand behind them and copy off their clipboards. So quite a few of us have to do this. Which is always funny, but there's no talking between, but people talk. And they'll see you coming by going, what do you think? I'm like, I'm not telling you. So anyway, there'd always be that guy or woman who would stand up, raise their hand and say, absolutely, that is the best one out of these 6. And here's why. And they give a whole lecture and everyone's jaw drops because not only is it the worst dog in the group, but he's picking out all the faults and saying their virtues. Guess what, Will? He gets 3 points too.
Yep.
That's a problem. That's a problem. When you have a bunch
of... You don't have to pass a seminar. You just have to attend it.
That's it. And maybe that's the problem. And how do you do it? You know,
I saw
Terry James about it. And he said, there should be somebody standing back there, a monitor. When you ask enough dumb questions and they get your clipboards and they read how you didn't get anything, you don't get 3 points. You don't get any. But how do you do that? The logistics are a nightmare. So hopefully what the AKC is saying is, here's the opportunity, learn what you can. And I don't know, I've been with people who took the Breed course for 2 points, $75, and went to the seminar, you know, I don't know, 3,000 divided by how many breeds you took, got three there, two there, low entry breed, and they're a judge. So did you do learning outside of that? I hope so. I hope so. The best judges always ask questions. Some really high profile judges, I'm sure with you too, will ask about sporting dogs and beagles and wolfhounds and whatever other breeds we're connected to. They'll ask us, even though they're five group judges, and we'll ask them. I mean, it's just, it's an individual experience that's full of trust. And the AKC has no chance, no other choice, but to hope that you have trust, because there's no real way to monitor it. You know, there's no way to do it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I like the idea where if you're somebody who's been around the sport forever, they give you a group and then the reps sit ringside and go, not that breed, not take it away, take it away, take it away, take it away. And you've got to go do something else and then come back. You know, let the cream rise to the top. But I don't know.
The problem is it's just so subjective. Like, there was a lot of big injuries this weekend, a lot of specialties, and different dogs won. Usually the same dog tended to rise to the top each day. But people made cases for other dogs. Sure. It's a very subjective sport. And to have someone outside saying, no, they don't get that, well,
mm-hmm.
It's true. Oh, it's hard.
That's the problem. You need 10 reps. At least seven. One for each group to hit a ringside, right?
The only way you have a vote, and I tell this to people all the time, is by entering under Wayne Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
That's true. That's your vote. You know, you're giving Wayne Kavanaugh a chance. Doesn't mean you're always going to win, but you want his opinion. Yeah. And that's your vote. That's your vote on if he is capable of judging Milton hound dogs, you know.
I can tell you that I know plenty of people that have been around for a long time look and go, I never heard of those three judges, but it's an hour and a half from home and sometimes they guess right. You know, sometimes they get lucky. They're going to point to somebody. Maybe it's me. Is that how we evaluate breeding stock? Is that what the sport's really about?
Well, no. And I think a lot of times coming to the show is not, well, it is for a lot of people, but if you're evaluating breeding stock and you're trying to look for something, it doesn't really matter who wins. You're there to see, and the Wayne's dogs, I'm there to see, check out what Wayne's bringing this weekend, because I have a bitch hole that I think is interesting, maybe bred to that dog. So even if he lost all 3 days, that's not going to change my mind about breeding to your dog if I'm comfortable with what I'm doing. Like, there was a huge entry in beagles this weekend, and it was a lot of fun to watch the different beagles. And we sat outside in the ring, and it was like Dana was there, Dana Klein, and Daniel was there, and John Constantine was there. And it was almost like a mini seminar outside watching all these. And it was a wonderful entry of beagles. You could talk about all these dogs and come up with different reasons for making a case for each dog. And it was fun as well. Like, I wasn't judging beagles, so I walked by and saw them all sitting there. So I sat down and we all watched beagles.
That's great. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. And I mean, for example, I mean, Paula going to these seminars, passion to learn. And I've told you before, Dick Beauchamp, as he was only in weeks to live, was sending me pictures of dogs and wanted to talk about them. People who never want to stop learning, and they're the best among us. If they have the eye for a dog, which some people say you can teach. I don't know if
I don't think you can. I think it comes with experience. It comes with it. But even, I hate to say it, you even have people that have been in the sport 30, 40 years. They may have caught on to certain things, but overall, unless they have that, they may have struggled and stayed in the sport that long. But unless you have that eye for symmetry and balance and each individual breed definition, like, breed definition is an important one. Like, I always, I watch judges, and when judges walk down the line and look at faces, I think it's that they're looking for brief definition right away. I think in my eye, they're like that. That's a Milton hound dog. I can tell by the cross-eyed bait, cross-eyed expression, and wondering where they are. But that's, I find that important. I always fall back. Actually, I fall back to the song that you wrote years ago, the one about dog named Red, and the three centered outline. You paint them all one color, you should still be able to tell which one is which.
Yeah, it's true. And you may not get those choices on the day. You may have to go elsewhere. Don't think we're loving the dogs we point to all the time. But we think they're the best ones on the day. And, you know, Will and I always talk about this, being selfish. I'm thinking about actually making a little sign and putting it on my judge's table. You know, please own yourself, you know.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, people are surprised what you did. And you're like, the only opinion that counted today was mine. And exactly. You paid for it. So have a nice day. We did our best.
I have friends ask me about showing to me. And I said, that's fine. You showed me. Just remember, I'm a selfish son of a bee. I'm going to do what I want to do.
It's true. But, you know, it is just a wonderful sport. And the AKC does a great job. And they really do. They do a spectacular job of giving you opportunities to learn.
Oh, there's no question. They've given you the tools. It's up to you to do the rest. You know, just...
They haven't given them to you. Well, they sold them to you.
Well, yeah, they sell you. They give you the opportunity to have the tools.
But, you know, maybe some of these high volume breeder registration fees could help us out once in a while. They could put on their own seminars. And I really think that's important. I would love to see them have a department who puts on 4 seminars a year. And that makes it 8, and people could get to them, and there'd be more opportunities to learn. And maybe you'd have smaller classroom size. You could limit the sizes, because now there was a seminar that got canceled because people couldn't get there or couldn't get a room. And when that happened, people wanted to jump in other seminars, which is great. I would too. But that raises the number of people in the room. By the way, I signed up for a particular seminar. And I bailed on it because I went to a different seminar, Will. It's a hound group. Who would you do anything to go see talk about her low entry breed? Yes, Pat Trotter. She did elk hounds, Will.
Are they a low entry breed? That? No, they were. No
elk hounds. Am I going to miss that? Never.
Elk hounds are a low entry breed?
Oh, God, everything is. More than half the breeds are low entry.
I would have loved Pat to
did Norwegian elk hounds.
Yeah.
And she had some good dogs too. And it was really fun to watch. First of all, she's a great teacher because she was one. And she knows how to get students to talk and make them look good or make fools of themselves. Another one, because the people couldn't get there, couldn't get hotel rooms, otter hounds. So this was an exception. I've never done this before. They did a Zoom meeting, which was really cool. They had 4 or 5 presenters, which is 4 or 5 opinions, usually get one. And one of those opinions was Nancy Martin.
Oh, wow. That's
how
excellent.
How cool was that?
Yeah.
How cool was that?
I saw Brian on the weekend. I only saw him one day. He was judging one day. Yeah. He was judging the day we all sat around watching Beagles.
Oh, man, that's great.
He was great. He was fun.
So the way they did the Otter Hound was they gave the regular seminar that they would give if you're there. The same, there's no change to that. And then for the hands-on, they were so clever. They got video of a dog class, a bitch class. They show you videos of the Ambred class, the open class, the bred by class, and then videos of those dogs competing for winners and the best of breed. It was really a great, because you got to see them move.
Sure.
Well, you don't get to see them move on designer rug in a small room. You don't. But on the video, they're in a show ring. So they have time to open and turn and do those things where you want to see. So I thought that was as good as or better than most. But again, there was probably 8 otter hounds in the videos. And there was one otter hound, Will, one. And nobody found her. And at the end, Nancy goes, what do you think? Well, I'm like, or Wayne, I said, the one that never get her tail up. You know, she never had her tail up, but she was so classic breed type. And Nancy gave a big speech about that is the only otter hound. And more important, why? And that you missed out because her tail was down. And you threw her out for that. We're evaluating the breeding stock. We're trying to learn about the breed. We're not trying to pick a dog show. I'm not saying she would have won that class with her tail down. She would have under me.
Yeah, the thing is, the way I look at that, the breed level, we're judging breeding stock. It's group level, she might not rise to the top with her tail down. So,
and she wasn't spooking out and scooting, scurrying. She just didn't get her tail up. And but you had to see the breed type. But you would have to have seen many, many otter hounds in your life. And we've had the opportunity to do that. You know, we've had plenty of really good otter hounds over the years. Yeah. And good teachers of them. And if you it's not the student's fault that they haven't seen enough otter hounds. It's just the fact that that's what it is. Or if they're coming from lure coursing, because it was sight hound seminars, you got a lot of people coming from lure coursing. You probably wouldn't see any otter hounds or bloodhounds lure coursing. So it's where you come from, how long you've been doing it. But again, great idea, great concept, well done. Rick and Sam and Robert and others definitely, super job putting it together and making it work and very efficient. I got a call from Sam. Oh, he texted me, get up here right now. Call me right now. Oh no. And he said, you forgot to sign this form. I said, oh, so I ran upstairs and we went and found him. But if you're interested, and if you're passionate, you're going to forget to sign forms. You're not there just to sign the form. You're in there studying. And
caught up on what you're doing.
Where's my piece of paper? Where's my piece of paper? But it was quite interesting to see how the whole thing went. I don't know. I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. So other than that, Will, it's been a couple of great weeks in dogs and a couple that are tough on the body and tough on the brain. There's a time, by the way, when even geniuses like us, Will, the top of the ship, what are they calling? Top shelf, high something. Yeah.
Top of the food chain. That's us, man.
Way up there. Even us can have our hard drive full and need to purge some other files before we can learn something else. And I can tell you that 12 breeds, I mean, really serious studying, hyper-focused 12 breeds, by that fourth day, that third breed, you're just like, they're talking. I know they're talking. I can hear them talking.
Oh, I know.
There are dogs here. I can see the dogs. But your brain's not accepting any more information. So I don't take that last one.
I get it.
Oh, and then the real fun came, Will. Getting home.
That's always
fun. The week of the global technology crash.
That's why I got to judge my very first best in show because of that.
Oh, is that why? Yeah.
Why? Yeah.
Thousands and thousands of flights canceled. I think Delta canceled over 6,000. So all of us, we were finished on Sunday at noon. And there are still people there on Tuesday that couldn't get out. I got out on Monday. I only got delayed one whole day. But to do that, I had an 18-minute connection. And I had a sprint. I don't want to do that ever again. Not at my age. I just wanted to get on the plane and go. And I was probably, I don't know, 30 hours later than I wanted to, but other people were still there. And Jamie and Doug rented a car.
Oh, you did tell me that. Yeah.
And drove home to Indianapolis, to Bloomington.
I think it's time for Star Trek transporter rooms. I think it's, I don't know why we don't have that yet.
But the airports were a zoo. It was horrible. It was just horrible. So you put up with all this, you're tired, you're running around. And by the way, the hotel had some food, but not every day. Because they didn't have any help and they didn't have any product. So yeah, Jim and I had BLTs every night because that was palatable. And you knew you wanted to go to bed. Let's go out to a restaurant. Really? Go ahead.
No.
Go ahead. So all that and more.
You're in the dog show drive. I was so tired one night, I went out to a local diner and had bacon and eggs from dinner and went back to bed.
Oh, yeah. I love breakfast for dinner.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. You know, you get to the point in your life where the older you get, the wiser you get about pacing yourself with food and sleep. Part of it is because we're just tired folks and we need rest. Oh. Yeah. This weekend, well, I'm going to Canfield. And I can't wait. Those are
big shows. A great show.
They're still up around 2,000, even in today's world.
Yeah.
And it is calling for thunderstorms. Waukesha got whacked again. Every show gets whacked with this crazy weather. I've got a lot of dogs to judge and a lot of weather to deal with. So it shall be fun. But 100.
And what day do you leave?
I leave on my birthday, Friday. I judge Saturday and return on
Sunday. That is Wayne Miss. Wayne Miss is Friday.
Yeah.
Wayne Miss for Friday. And what, I don't know if I should tell this, but it's a important birthday. It's a number that.
I shouldn't have mentioned age. Could have got around this. It's a big number, Will. Let's just say this. There's two people that you might know that are my age. And a lot of times I get confused with those people for the obvious reasons. When I'm dancing, Will, they all think I'm John Travolta, who's the same age as I am. And when I wear those tight European suits and I'm really tall and lean, I hear a lot of, "Hey, Denzel, is that you? Hey, Denzel Washington, I think that's you." So I get confused with those two just because we're the same age. 7-0, Will.
7-0. I know it.
Man. But you know what? And this is the truth. I plan on living forever. And so far, it's working out.
Yep.
So far, it's working out. So
you look great, Robert Redford.
John Travolta. Well, let me dance, then you can come. See, now you can see how much I look like John Travolta. I feel pretty good for an old man. But I'm almost as old. What, another year? I'll be as old as you. So that's
another year. Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll never catch up to Belter. If you and I add our ages together, we don't hit Belterdom, because 86 is, and he still gets around with those dogs.
Oh, he does a great job out there.
He sleeps a lot at ringside. He has that hitch now, and there's a lot of moaning, a lot of noises. But you know, for 86, guy's good. He's,
yeah,
his hair's growing.
He's a wonder. He's a wonder.
Yeah. He tells me under that hat his hair's growing back, so that's a plus too.
I wish mine would.
And again, I got it cut short because I don't want to make you guys feel bad, but I've got a full crop, and you fellas, you know, what can I say?
We'll be standing around. We'll see some walk by and we'll think, oh,
that guy's got hair.
What the heck?
Beautiful, beautiful. What else you got, buddy?
Oh, well, not much. I leave for Maryland on Friday. I'm doing another seminar in Maryland, at a training center in Maryland, so that'll be fun. And then I'm back, and I get back Sunday night, Monday morning, depending on how enthusiastic I am. And then I go to the lake for about 5 days. I'm just going to shut everything down and go to the lake.
Isn't that nice?
Liam and I are going to go.
We did sneak off for 3 days this week in the middle of all this and run down to our place in Venice to just do nothing. Ended up doing everything because we're in the middle of updating the house, and lots of carpenters and flooring people and painters and electricians in and out. But it's still not being here. So I'm away from my files, my folders, and it gets you at least away. And although I woke up this morning thinking I was still in Florida. And I reached for the funny thing is we have a pocket door on the bathroom in both places. One has an inset door, one doesn't. So I grab by the inset to open the door here, and you can't there. And I'm always confused when I wake up in the middle of the night. Where is there an edge? Oh, I know where I am now. Edge, no edge. That's how I can tell. Very simple. But
I'm looking forward to having my tea on the deck. First thing in the morning, overlooking the lake, so I can listen to the loons and watch the mist, and no one's around, and I'm just going to do that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go to Canfield to listen to loons, Will, and they'll be there.
They will be. But first time in Maryland, and that'll be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to that. And then when I get home, I'll relax.
You know, we do sometimes frame this sport as difficult or unfair, and it probably is. But at the end of the day, we can't help ourselves. It's in our DNA. It's in our blood. Nothing you can do about it.
Even though I'm exhausted, I love what I do.
Yeah.
I love what I do. I think about this past weekend, judging the dogs I judged. I think about who I got to spend time with. I love what I do. I'm a lucky guy.
We are. Because would you have this many, would we have as many friends as we do that share the same passion that we do if we were doing something else at home? We wouldn't. The amazing thing about this sport is that you have hundreds of people that you share the same passion with. And that just doesn't happen.
I discussed earlier about being at ringside with watching the Beagles and the excitement of just that small, like, there was like four or five mm-hmm. of us, and the excitement level. And that's not going to happen anywhere else. And then we were all just walking by, and also we just, we'll stop here and watch this. And then...
And the other thing is, Will, you had a breed entry to look at.
Yep.
And that's so important to having, because if it was ones and twos, would you be sitting there?
Yeah.
If you were, what would you be talking about?
Would have glanced over and kept on going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a big deal. Oh, now I'm getting messages. I've got to take my brother to the doctor. So anyway, buddy, love you. Peace be with you. Safe travels.
Thank you.
And all that stuff. But more important, Will, you keep it up. You keep out there. You keep hitting it hard, and you get a back brace is what you do. You get a back brace.
I have one. I wore a back brace most this weekend. Yeah. I told everybody, some of the people noticed it. I say, well, at night I'm Batman, so.
Well, the thing about those is if it's hot out, it's hot under that belt.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That's brutal. But. Well, happy weather, too. All right, pal. I'm off and on.
It's great to see you, as always. And everybody else, stay safe out there. And we will see you down the road.
Well, hello again, everyone. And welcome back to the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. I'm Wayne Kavanagh.
You are. It's great to see you. I'm Will Alexander.
Yes, you are. But this week, we're going to talk about Houston, the amazing seminars and show that existed there, Will's trips all over the world, between countries, that is, and seminars, education, broken backs, the hard part of judging, the good parts, and most important, you won't hear one thing about politics or elections. There's nowhere else you can get that these days, so stay tuned to the Dog Show Drive.